Meteorologists said it would be the coldest weekend since 1957. Temperatures at -9 with wind chills coming in dangerously close to -22 to -30. No one could bear elements for more than 5 to 10 minutes without frostbite setting in. Many area homeless shelters were at capacity and then some that particular weekend. One of those evenings, a Cambridge City police officer came across a gentleman in Harvard Square who did not want to go to any of the shelters. This is not uncommon in the homeless community due to fear of violence, unsafe conditions, and the possible theft of one's belongings. Though there were, I am sure, many others out and about in Harvard Square that evening, it was this particular police officer that stopped and was able to convince the gentleman to go to the Harvard Square homeless shelter. As they arrived, one of the student staff members explained to the officer that they were not only at capacity, but that their system of entrance was of a lottery each evening and morning. Hence, they could not just take anyone at the door. The student staff member began a series of calls to a variety of other shelters to find a spot for this gentleman, who was nonverbal, cold, and by then had soiled himself. As the staff member was nearly in tears, trying to figure out how to help this person, a guest of the shelter, not a staff person or a volunteer, a guest, said that they would take the train in the cold with this person to a shelter that would accept him. And that this person did, braving the elements and speaking for this gentleman so that he would not die in the cold that evening. This guest asked for nothing in return, no fare for the train, no recognition, not to be compensated, nothing. Most of us are familiar with the parable of the Good Samaritan, the story of a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho, while along the way he is robbed of everything, including his clothes, and beaten within an inch of his life. We hear Jesus tell us that not one but two individuals passed this person by showing no compassion, though it is the Samaritan who stops to help, seeking nothing in return. The Samaritan who saw his neighbor as anyone who was in need. Anyone who was in need. Now, to understand what Jesus is trying to tell us, we return to verse 25, where Jesus is questioned by a Jewish lawyer, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" Mind you, this is not a lawyer one would encounter in a courtroom. This lawyer is an expert in his Hebrew Bible, our Old Testament. When the lawyer questions Jesus, in essence, he is asking, "What must I do to be saved?" Remember this question. What must I do to be saved? You can almost picture Jesus smiling as he poses these questions back to the lawyer. What is written in the law? What is your take on it? You know the law. What does it say? The lawyer responds, "You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your strengths, and all of your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Your neighbor as yourself. "You are correct," Jesus states. Do this, and you will live. But like any good lawyer, he presses on, almost seeking a loophole. "And who is my neighbor? Who and how much do I have to love? What do I have to do to get in?" Jesus' answer is to share with the lawyer what someone who is already in looks like. Hence the Good Samaritan. The lawyer knew the right answer. But he was unprepared for what compassion looked like in real life, what compassion looked like, what his neighbor, a good Samaritan, looked like. I was that kid who questioned everything. I had a smart answer for everything, and I was also the same kid who caused and got into a load of trouble. I used to say trouble followed me around, but I can't act that innocent. I was that neighborhood kid who no one could control and who I honestly thought no one paid attention to. How little did I know? There was a family who lived in the house next to my parents' apartment. They had a son and three daughters, all older than I. For some reason that for years escaped me, the oldest daughter, Karen, and I connected somehow. She had 13 years on me, and there was no rhyme or reason to our connection at the time for me. Karen used to let me follow her around. I was maybe 12 or 13 at the time. I would sit for hours listening to music with her. She would take me for ice cream, took me to my first concert, even allowing me to hang out with her friends. Though I'm sure I gave Karen a good run for her money, I never felt like a burden, or that she felt like she had to watch over me. And never once did she complain. She shared of herself without restriction, without questions, and without want for anything in return. Little that I knew, Karen was sick. She began getting sick as early as 15 and suffered for many years, though you never would have known because she never complained. This is what compassion looked like. This is what compassion looked like, felt like, at least for this teenage neighbor. Even up until Karen's recent death, she always had time to chat, to laugh, to listen, and though to many this may not have seemed like much, in many ways Karen saved my life. Without knowing in the end, Karen was the Good Samaritan along my road to Jericho, who, because of her actions, changed how I treated others in my life. Karen's compassion taught me I should and could always lead with compassion. Compassion for one's neighbor without want in return, because compassion does something. Compassion feels something. Compassion costs something of our lives, of ourselves, and compassion demonstrates our relationship to God. Jesus is telling us to follow the Samaritan's example in our own life, to show compassion and love for those we encounter. The Samaritan saw his neighbor as anyone who was in need, anyone who was in need. So where does this come from? Where does the power within ourselves come from to do what goes against our very grain? To cross the street there in Jericho to help another, to stand in the doorway on a freezing night to help a soul, to cross the threshold of the doorways to help another not die on the streets. Where does that power come from? What must we do to cross the street in Jericho? Why must we? Why do we cross the street in Jericho in our own lives? And so Jesus asked the lawyer if he can apply the lesson of the Good Samaritan to his own life. But the lawyer is unable to even say the word Samaritan, instead always saying good man. His hate for those specific neighbors, Samaritans, was so strong that he could not even refer to them in the proper manner. Jesus tries to explain that one cannot be saved by the law. You do understand, because no one can keep the law perfectly. But we can set aside our prejudices and show love and compassion for others. Because trying to keep the law perfectly in its entirety, with the intent to save ourselves, is an impossible task. We return to that question: what must I do to be saved? What must I do to be saved? In the end, Jesus asks, which of the three do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The lawyer says, the one who showed him mercy. The one who, in near tears, wanted to save a life. The one who, without question or judgment in her mind, showed compassion to a teenager. The one who, without want or need, helped the stranger to a warm place on a dangerously cold evening. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. Dear friends, go and do likewise to your neighbor.